Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the deadly and the destructive myths which are associated with religion, with politics, patriotism, the media, military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is occurring behind the headlines while predicting how the events they foretell will shape our world. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on his terms through evidence and reason, since his is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly disingenuous world. Our phone number is toll-free for anyone who would like to participate in this discussion over the next 2 hours, 877-300-7645. Horrible train crash yesterday in Spain. Nothing sinister to report in the sense of it does not appear to be an act of Islamic terrorism. It appears simply that the operator was speeding, going twice as fast as the train was designed around a curve. But some 78 people have been killed. Some 100 more are seriously injured. It just goes to show, as did the tragedy of the plane crash in San Francisco, even in the plane crash most recently in New York, where the nose gear failed, that operator error is becoming a very serious concern. That we have made equipment more and more technically advanced, but those who are operating these transportation devices, whether they be trains or airplanes, are flawed individuals like the rest of us. And that when we put ourselves in these vehicles, we put ourselves at risk. It isn't the same as trusting and relying on your government, which is working against you at almost all of the time. It isn't like putting yourself in the pews of a church or on the floor of a mosque where the religion is wholly and completely counterproductive. But it does bring out the fact that when we make decisions to trust, when we choose to rely, we should do so with our eyes open. We should consider what we are doing. It's the shades of a little bit, if I may, on the choice between religion and relationship. You know, if you're going to do as Yahweh has requested, which is to choose to trust him, choose to rely on the plan that he has provided for us, the only way that you can do those things is to do some due diligence, to investigate, to consider who he is and what he's offering. Trust and reliance require knowing the source and understanding the particular approach. So in the case of transportation, we ought to be wary. We ought to consider the history of those airlines and the history of the trains and the operators that we choose to ride upon and embark on. We ought to look at the dangers that are involved and compare them to other choices. It is part of why we have been given a nesama, a conscience that can evaluate good and bad, right and wrong. It was an interesting item in the news yesterday that probably passed without notice, but from 1970 to 2008, the marriage rate in the United States has declined by almost 50%. Now, that's a landscape change. You know, if we look at the plight of America, from 1970 to 2008, we see America going from being the economic engine of the world, of being the largest creditor nation on earth, and now America is no longer the leading manufacturing country of the world. We're now the world's largest debtor. It's seen America emerge from a failed war and engage in two additional failed wars. Since that time, we've seen America take the wrong side in the Middle East and make a very bad situation much worse. We've seen a decline of our morality, our judgment, a great increase in our national dependence. Well, from 1970 to 2008, the U.S. marriage rate declined from 76.5% to 37.4%. Not only is the marriage rate declining, but the rate of decline is accelerating. If you look at a graph, and they charge this as the way that it is calculated, and it's by the University of Virginia that publishes the data. And they publish it on a report that's called The State of Our Unions, if you'd like to look it up. So it's the University of Virginia. It's an annual report. It's called The State of Our Unions. And what they monitor is the number of women per 1,000 unmarried women in the country at any one time, and the number of marriages per unmarried women has the rate is such that it is now showing that marriage is half as popular as it was just 38 years ago. I mean, that is truly staggering. You know, most societies have grown and prosper on the basis of marriage and family and of husbands and wives and mothers and fathers working together and them caring for and supporting their children, educating their children, doing whatever they can to give their children even a better opportunity than they had, a better education than they had, and just to enjoy the family unit and to prosper and grow as a family. Well, when marriage and therefore family declines at this kind of rate, you should expect a significant decline in society as a whole. Now, I suspect that a lot of this is a direct result of the enormous sexual revolution that grew out of the 1960s, and that's when you see the trend really, you know, the late 1960s, early 1970s is when this trend begins to accelerate. And that was a time when political correctness and the liberal mindset came to totally dominate universities. And the product of American universities were forever influenced by the indoctrination that they were given, where exercising good judgment was considered a crime, where reason and rhetoric and logic were discouraged in schools, where the things that were abnormal, homosexuality, transgender, bisexuality, that they were celebrated while heterosexual relationships were looked to be antiquated. It was a time where sex was free, but not within the confines of exclusivity within a marriage. And it has led to this, to a near 50% decline. We're talking about 76.5 to 37.4 in the preference for a marriage. That just as a trend by itself is irreconcilable. This disdain for marriage, for creating a family unit to raise children and to educate them and to help them grow, to give them a sense of right and wrong, that's decline alone, combined with this the lack of fidelity, of commitment in a relationship, that alone is sufficient to cause our society to fail. Of course, there are hundreds of others issues, including the education system that brought this about. But it is alarming. Speaking of alarming, Pope Francis, who I am convinced is among the least intelligent men to have been voted to become a pope. Not saying that intelligence is a measure of a man that has been chosen to lead a religion, but intelligence can be an asset and lack of it can be a liability. Based upon what this man has said, I am convinced that he is missing many cards in his deck. Pope Francis yesterday criticized drug legalization. Now, the kind of drug legalization he was criticizing was the legalization of marijuana in Latin American countries. He said that it is the roots of drug abuse that should be tackled as opposed to drugs being legalized. The reality is that if you're going to represent God, then you have to be an advocate for free will. If you're going to represent your church, then you're going to be an advocate for law. You know, the church loves rules. All religions love rules. That's the basis of religion. We're going to establish a bunch of rules. We're going to establish a bunch of laws. You know, here Christianity claims that it's free from the law and that it's a salvation through faith in the gospel of grace. Well, I got news for you. That's pure hypocrisy. Yahweh has no laws, and the church has many. And the church just loves laws. It loves to control people by making them obey laws. But in free will, we ought to have the choices to do whatever we wish. Now, I don't advocate using a drug, but I think you ought to be free to use one if you choose to. Moreover, he was complaining that by changing the rules and legalizing marijuana, that it would somehow enrich those who sell the drugs, when exactly the opposite is true. The reason that there is this illicit market and it's so monetarized for selling drugs is because they're illegal. The opposite of what the man says is true. But there's more in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the pontiff of the Roman Catholic Church. He said that, and this is at a trip to a shrine for Our Lady of Arparchidia, and we'll talk about Our Lady in a moment. But he warned the tens of thousands of faithful against passing idols, the idols of money, power, and pleasure. Now, by the way, he's speaking at a shrine dedicated to an idol. So here's the man. He is speaking at a shrine dedicated, devoted to an idol. And he says that, and he warns against the passing idols of money, power, and pleasure. Well, the Roman Catholic Church is based upon money. Power is something that God actually encourages. It's the fifth of five benefits of the covenant. And pleasure is what he's all about. God wants us to be happy. He throws seven parties a year and invites you to those parties. His original idea of our relationship in the Garden of Eden is named the Gan Eden, which is the enclosure of great joy. Every one of God's seven invitations is called a chag. A chag is a festival feast, a party, a celebration. But the religious are never happy unless everybody is miserable. Now, he was making this speech, of course, at a shrine to an idol. This is an 18th century clay statue, the traditional form of a carved image representing, in this case, they claim Mary, but it could have been any Mother Earth, the goddess. The Brazilian Catholics, especially of the Roman Rite, who consider the Mary to be the patroness of Brazil. Now, by the way, Mary is irrelevant. Scripturally, she is irrelevant. Yahweh simply said, you know, all right with you because of your lineage. And it was really because of her genealogy going back to David and Abraham, that because of her genealogy and that of her fiancé, Yahweh said, I'd like to use your womb. And she said, fine. That was about it. That was about the extent of her contribution. That's not to say that she was a bad lady. She's probably a very nice lady. I think we'd all would have enjoyed knowing her. A nice lady. She can't hear any prayer that is given to her. God specifically said that any idol is an abomination. The whole statement that we have been considering for these past few days is strictly an admonition not to bow down and to pay homage to any idol. And here's the pontiff of the Roman Catholic Church bowing and venerating an idol. Anyway, this story about this particular idol is that there were three fishermen who were praying to the Virgin Mary, and they found while they were fishing, they caught more fish than they had previously. Now, mind you, they have always been praying to the Virgin Mary, and their fishing was miserable. One day they pray to the Virgin Mary, and their fishing is great, so they say, oh, it must be the Virgin Mary. Now, of course, that's the kind of reason that is associated with religion. And then they said that while they were fishing, they found a headless statue. And then they said, well, maybe we found the bottom of the statue first, and then we found the head of the statue. Oh, well, we don't really know how the statue came together. In fact, we're clueless as to how this came to be. But nonetheless, it makes for a good story. And here is a statue of a dark-skinned, colored Mother Earth goddess type. We'll put it in fancy robes. We'll build a massive basilica to it. We'll have the Pope that's about ready to be canonized, made a saint. We'll have him say that we will consecrate the basilica and the statue. We'll call it a public holiday, and we'll make it a shrine for the world. It is the largest shrine to Mary in the world. And so it is there that this Pope said, you ought not pay homage to passing idols. And he names the idols as money, power, and pleasure, right while he is speaking on behalf of and venerating an idol. More on this story. The Pope decided that he would go to Brazil at the time that it was the Rio de Janeiro World Youth Day, where there were 500,000 people gathered in Rio for World Youth Day. Vatican reporters told the young Catholics that this is not a safe place for you to be. Now, that is one thing they actually got right. Listening to this Pope is not safe for your children. Well, welcome back to Shattering Myths. There's a interesting story out of Washington. The President of the United States gave a speech on the economy. Now, mind you, the speech that he gave on the economy was the same one that he gave in his State of the Union address, where he compared the U.S. economy to the U.S. military. He was wanted the U.S. economy to be run similarly to the way that the U.S. military is run, which is command and controlled. That is communism. He spoke of the collective sacrifice and the collective benefit, which is from each according to their ability and to each according to their need, that exists within the military construct. It was the most overtly communist statement that had probably ever been made in a country where the economy is supposed to be the benefit of free enterprise. And on the heels of this man's disastrous past, where he has gone from having his attorney general indicted over issues related to Fast and Furious, where we supplied the weapons that have been used to murder so many Mexicans and Americans in the drug wars that are existing between our borders and in Mexico. He then created the fiasco of Benghazi, where he deliberately and knowingly changed the facts and lied to the American people, blaming a movie produced by a Copt Christian on the deaths of the U.S. Crew in the Benghazi State Department wasn't an embassy, but the State Department facility in Benghazi knowingly lied and never came clean on his lies. Then he gets involved in the IRS scandal and he lies about it, telling the American people that it's just inadvertent, it's a non-event, when in fact we now know that the head of the IRS that Obama had appointed met with Obama in the White House days before this new policy was put in place, and the Cincinnati office that was rogue and doing their own thing has now under oath testified that they were following the directions that came out of Washington when they were targeting conservative groups like the Tea Party. And then we have the Prism and Verizon wiretap and internet spying scandal that is thrust upon us, where this president, in direct violation of his oath of office, is undermining the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Then he gives speeches regarding the sanctification of Trayvon Martin, lying to the American people about his nature and the actual reality concerning the deaths of African Americans at their own hand as opposed to at the hand of whites, and manages to stir up the strife that is racial strife in addition now to economic strife by condemning George Zimmerman in the process. And then you have the president's one great claim where he says, I saved Detroit. You know, where the Republicans didn't want to bail out the automakers, I saved Detroit, and that's why I should be trusted with the economy. That was his whole defense as he was running for re-election, and now we have Detroit bankrupt. So in his economic speech, after he condemns the Republicans for being responsible for the economic woes of America, and he takes full credit for the recovery, which is non-existent, we have a clip from this president of the United States.
With this endless parade of distractions and political posturing and phony scandals, Washington's taken its eye off the ball. And I'm here to say this needs to stop. Our focus has to be on the basic economic issues that matter most to you, the people we represent.
So there you go. The president is responsible for each of these scandals. They are scandals because of his malfeasance. It is possible, and maybe even likely, that in a history of malfeasance in Washington and corrupt administrations, that this one may be the most corrupt of all time. And so here is a man who is responsible for the Benghazi scandal, for the Fast and Furious scandal, for the IRS scandal, for the Prism and Verizon scandal, for the all of the racist lies that have been perpetrated regarding Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, Detroit bankrupts.
Right?
And he calls them a phony scandal.
Phony.
So,
fraudulent.
Phony scandal. So if you look at his malfeasance, that's just a distraction. Now, there is something good about this. Barack Obama is the antithesis of a free enterprise politician. Given the choice, he would like to run the U.S. economy like the U.S. military, where he is commander-in-chief and therefore total command and control. Anything that he does is counterproductive. Anything he doesn't do is a blessing. So thank God he continues to provide distractions and he has taken his eye off the ball, because in this game, the ball is his. The bat is his, and he wishes to use that bat to beat Americans over the head. But can you imagine a president so out of touch with reality, a president so above his own malfeasance, that he'd make a statement like that?
Well, they're phony and fraudulent claims. They're not real scandals. They're just fake. They're not actually happening. I mean, we're only going after Snowden for the NSA thing. You know, but that's because he brought up phony claims.
You know, it's amazing, too, that today the this is the reason why I say you ought not vote. I do not vote. I do not participate in American politics anymore. And I hear all these people say, you know, if you don't participate, then you're going to, you know, just get you can't complain because you get the government that you deserve. But why vote? You've got now Republicans joining with Democrats in Washington approving the Verizon wiretap scheme. They've agreed to continue to fund it. It's just astonishing that it doesn't matter if you elect a Republican or Democrat. Neither one is willing to honor the U.S. Constitution. If you're not willing to work within the confines of the Constitution, then why bother with an election? It isn't worth it. You ought not put your name beside a political candidate. Don't participate. They're both absolutely rotten to the core. The NSA, of course, continued to lobby for this breach of the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And they were particularly eager to continue the Verizon wiretap program, which is completely untargeted. In fact, the one thing that this administration has put in place is to say you can't target a mosque or any Islamic organization without the administration's express approval. Well, that's the only place that would be appropriate to target. And so you've got Republicans and Democrats aside saying stupid stuff. You know, for example, have 12 years gone by and our memories faded so badly that we've forgotten what happened on September 11th, said Mike Rogers, Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, or the lack of intelligence committee. You know, on 9/11, the FBI, through the old-fashioned way, through cooperations with the Philippine government, had the entire schema of 9/11. Ramzi Youssef wrote it. It was on his computer. We were given access to every note that Ramzi Youssef created for the plan that is 9/11. The flight training, bringing in Muslims from other countries to get their flight training, the way they would be sequestered in this country, the specific targets they'd fly those planes into. And we knew that he had carried out even the attack now that we can't carry bottles of fluids on airplanes. Well, that particular attack was another one of Ramzi's attacks. And we knew that Ramzi was serious about trying to bring down the World Trade Center because at the time, it was shortly thereafter, about 3 years after the confiscation of his plan to perpetrate 9/11, he was involved in the first bombing of the World Trade Center. And he even told us that the World Trade Center wouldn't stand for long because of the plan to bring it down by flying planes into it. And yet, we're told that targeting of Americans, as if Americans are the enemy of their government, is the solution to 9/11. The solution to 9/11 is don't trust your government. The solution of America is that we ought to eliminate the FBI and the CIA because they're counterproductive. They knew the truth, they knew it in advance, and still haven't come clean on it. Still have been unwilling to acknowledge that they knew this plan in advance. Moreover, one of the things that was evident in the immediate aftermath of 9/11 is our government came out and talked about all of the ways that the NSA tracks and monitors all electronic communication. And they revealed what they knew and what they didn't know about chatter that took place prior to the attack. And one of the things that they acknowledged was that the Islamic terrorists knew full well that we were using the NSA because we had bragged about using the NSA to do this very thing. And they stopped using the internet and stopped using their cell phones and satellite phones to communicate and went to handwritten notes carried by carriers. There is nothing that this does that protects Americans from anything. All it does is infringe on their rights. And yet you have both Republicans and Democrats voting on behalf of undermining the U.S. Constitution, treating Americans as the enemy, and collecting data with unreasonable search and seizure. It is revolting. Speaking of revolting, the United States, because of Obama's speech in the heart of the wellspring from which the Muslim Brotherhood grew, Al-Azhar University in Cairo, talking about the great religion of Islam and his great respect for the religion of Islam, where he talked about America having done many things that were wrong, but Islam leaving a lasting legacy on the world. When he did that, shortly thereafter, the what's called the Arab Spring, which was an Islamic reformation, began to take hold of the world. The first country that was toppled as a secular dictator in Tunisia was toppled. And what was brought up in its place was the Ennahda Party, which is a fundamentalist Islamic party. Shortly thereafter, the most outspoken secular politician was murdered. And yesterday, the second most popular secular politician was murdered. And the murder was obviously orchestrated by the Islamic party that has come to control that country. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I'm your host, Yetta. You can engage in this discussion by calling toll-free 877-300-7645. This is should be a national scandal. It should add to the list of national scandals that that are bugging our current president. But the Pakistan Taliban has announced recently, I think it was last week, that they have set up camps to train and send Taliban fighters into Syria to fight alongside the rebels who were opposed to President Bashar al-Assad. The militant organization said that that their strategy was to embrace their Sunni brethren. More than 2 years since the anti-Assad rebellion, Syria has become a magnet for foreign Sunni fighters who have flocked to the Middle Eastern nation to join what they can see to be a holy war against Shiite oppressors. Operating alongside militant groups such as the Al-Nusra Front, described by the United States as a branch of Al-Qaeda, they mainly come from nearby countries such as Libya and Tunisia, riven by similar conflict as a result of the Arab Spring. Isn't that interesting? So, the United States is sending drones over Pakistan, and we have troops in Afghanistan whose sole mission it is to kill Taliban. And yet, in Syria, we are supplying arms to Saudi Arabia and to Qatar to funnel them into Syria to arm the Taliban. If it wasn't so sad, it would be funny. I mean, we are literally arming and equipping the very people that we're killing with our arms and equipment. There is a reason, again, that we ought not be patriotic, that we ought not support our military, that we ought not be political. Now, I'm not saying that the military is evil, but I'm going to tell you that it is deployed by evil men. This notion that our weapons are being sent to the Taliban in Syria while we hunt down and kill the Taliban with our weapons in Pakistan and Afghanistan is so convoluted, so twisted, so perverted that it could only happen within the realm of politics. This article says the announcement further complicates the picture on the ground in Syria. No, it doesn't complicate it. It's always been exactly what it was. It's never changed. You have brother against brother, Muslim against Muslim. The Syrian conflict became an armed conflict because of the United States. When we invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran, when we deposed a secular dictator in Iraq and gave the control of that country over to the imams in Tehran, the influence of Shia Islam spread. Syria, which had been a client of Iraq, became a client of Iran, became wholly influenced by Shia Islam, as was Lebanon. Lebanon was destroyed. Syria was destroyed. Iraq was destroyed. And we took the country on the cusp of nuclear weapons, the most lethal Islamic nation on earth, and we empowered them. And so the Syrian war became a proxy war for the Sunni Muslims, particularly in Qatar and Saudi Arabia, to regain their influence over the region, influence that they lost because of America's invasion of Iraq. And the very Sunni Muslims that America was providing weapons to in their awakening program were the first to militarize what was a peaceful revolution. And that is the mess that we created. And now we are aiding, siding with the very rebels, the very mujahideen, the very jihadists that we sought to kill in Iraq and that we are killing today in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. You know, it used to be that America played this game of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and we would manufacture the next enemy. You know, talking about Iraq, the United States provided chemical and biological weapons to Iraq for the express purpose of Iraq fighting against Iran. And then after we had made Iraq a formidable foe, as treating them as if they were our friend, we turned against them. I mean, the same thing is true with almost everything the United States has done. But this time, rather than manufacturing our next enemy and then having to go fight them and justifying our use of our military, we're doing it simultaneously.